The following podcast contains advertising. To access an ad-free version of the Lawfare podcast, become a material supporter of Lawfare at patreon.com/lawfare. That's patreon.com/lawfare. Also, check out Lawfare's other podcast offerings, Rational Security, Chatter, Lawfare No Bull, and The Aftermath.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Elena Kagan, and this is the Lawfare Podcast, September 26, 2019. Acting Director of National Intelligence Joseph McGuire appeared before the House Intelligence Committee to discuss his handling of the whistleblower complaint that alleges inappropriate conduct by the President related to his interactions with the Ukrainian government. In the hours preceding McGuire's testimony, an unclassified copy of the complaint was released to the public. The hearing saw Democrats scrutinize McGuire's handling of the complaint and the administration's role in withholding it. The hearing occasionally devolved into discussions of conspiracy theories about Democrats' motivations to investigate Trump's conduct and the party's ties to Ukraine. But we cut out all the unnecessary repetition and theatrics to leave you with just the questions and answers that you need to hear. It's the Lawfare Podcast Bonus Edition, McGuire versus the Committee with No Bull.
Would you agree that the whistleblower complaint alleges serious wrongdoing by the President of the United States?
The whistleblower complaint involved the allegation of that. It is not for me in the intelligence community to decide how the President conducts his foreign policy or his interaction with leaders of other countries, sir.
Well, I'm not asking you to opine on how the President conducts foreign policy. I'm asking you whether, as the statute requires, this complaint involved serious wrongdoing, in this case by the President of the United States, an allegation of serious wrongdoing by the President of the United States. Is that not the subject of this complaint?
Yes, that is the subject of the allegation of the complaint. And two things, Mr. Chairman.
And let me ask you about that. The Inspector General found that serious allegation of misconduct by the President credible. Did you also find that credible?
I did not criticize the Inspector General's decision on whether or not it was credible. My question was whether or not it meets the urgent concern and the 7-day time frame that would follow once I was notified.
My question,
so
Director.
I have no question in his judgment that he considers it a serious matter.
Well,
the issue that I dealt
and,
with.
And you would concur, would you not, Director, that this complaint alleging serious wrongdoing by the President was credible?
It's not for me to judge, sir.
It is for you to judge, apparently. I mean, I agree it's not for you to judge. You shall provide it to Congress. But indeed, you did judge whether this complaint should be provided to Congress. Can we at least agree that the Inspector General made a sound conclusion that this whistleblower complaint was credible?
That is correct. That is in the cover letter that's been provided to the committee. I believe that's also made public, the decision and the recommendation by the Inspector General that, in fact, the allegation was credible.
Can we also agree that it was urgent, that if the President of the United States was withholding military aid to an ally, even as you received the complaint, and was doing so for a nefarious reason, that is to exercise leverage over the President of Ukraine to dig up manufactured dirt on his opponent, can we agree that it was urgent while that aid was being withheld?
There are two things.
I'm talking about the common understanding of what urgent means, because Inspector General said this was urgent, not only in the statutory meaning, this was urgent as everyone understands that term. Can we agree that it was urgent?
It was urgent and important, but my job as the Director of National Intelligence was to comply with the Whistleblower Protection Act and that adhere to the definition of urgent concern, which is a legal term.
And to adhere to the meaning of the term shall.
Yes, sir.
In this case, you sought a second opinion on whether shall really means shall by going to the White House.
No, sir. There were two things, as I said in my statement. One, it appeared that it also had matters of executive privilege. I am not authorized as the Director of National Intelligence to waive executive privilege.
And two, at any time over the last month that you held this complaint, did the White House assert executive privilege?
Mr. Chairman, I have endeavored
I think that's a yes or no question. Did they ever assert executive privilege?
They were working through the executive privilege procedures and deciding whether or not to exert executive privilege. And
so they never exerted executive privilege. Is that the answer?
If they did, we would not have released the letters yesterday and all the information that has been forthcoming.
Now, the first place you went was to the White House. Am I to understand that from your opening statement? It wasn't to the Department of Justice. The first place you went for a second opinion was to the White House?
I did not go for a second opinion. The question was, is the information contained here subject to executive privilege, not whether or not it met urgent concern?
And so the first place you went for advice as to whether you should provide the complaint as the statute requires to Congress was the White House?
I am not authorized as the Director of National Intelligence to provide executive privileged information. I think it is prudent as a member of the executive branch to check to ensure that, in fact, it does not.
I'm just asking about the sequencing here. Did you first go to the White House to determine whether you should provide a complaint to Congress?
No, sir. That was not the question. The question was whether or not it has executive privilege, not whether or not I should send it on to Congress.
Okay. Is the first party you went to outside of your office to seek advice, counsel, direction, the White House?
I have consulted with the White House counsel, and eventually we also consulted with the Department of Justice Office of Legal Counsel.
And my question is, did you go to the White House first?
I went to the Office of Legal Counsel for advice. Yes, sir.
I'm asking which you went to first. Did you go to the Department of Justice Office of Legal Counsel first, or did you go to the White House first?
I went to the office, my office went to the Office of Legal Counsel first to receive whether or not the matter in the letter and in the complaint might meet the executive privilege. They viewed it and said, we've determined that it appears to be executive privilege. And until executive privilege is determined and cleared, I did not have the authority to be able to send that forward to the committee. I worked with the Office of Legal Counsel for the past several weeks to get resolution on this. It's a very deliberate process.
Well, Director, I'm still trying to understand the chronology. So you first went to the Office of Legal Counsel, and then you went to White House Counsel?
Repeat that, please, sir.
I'm just trying to understand the chronology. You first went to the Office of Legal Counsel, and then you went to the White House Counsel?
No, sir. No, we went to the White House first to determine, to ask the question.
Okay, that's all I wanted to know is chronology. So you went to the White House first. So you went to the subject of the complaint for advice first about whether you should provide the complaint to Congress.
There were issues within this, a couple of things. One, it did appear that it has executive privilege. If it does have executive privilege, it is the White House that determines that. I cannot determine that as the Director of National Intelligence.
But in this case, the White House, the President, is the subject of the complaint. He's the subject of the wrongdoing. Mm-hmm. Were you aware when you went to the White House for advice about whether evidence of wrongdoing by the White House should be provided to the Congress, were you aware that the White House counsel has taken the unprecedented position that the privilege applies to communications involving the President, When he was president, involving the president. When he wasn't president, involving people who never served in the administration, involving people who never served in the administration, even when they're not even talking to the president. Were you aware that that is the unprecedented position of the White House you went to for advice about whether you should turn over a complaint involving the White House?
Mr. Chairman, as I said in my opening statement, I believe that everything here in this matter is totally unprecedented, and that is why my former directors of national intelligence forwarded them to you, whether or not it met urgent concern or whether it was serious. This was different. And to me, it just seemed prudent to be able to check and ensure as a member of the executive branch before I sent it forward.
I just have a couple more questions. I'm going to turn over to the ranking member, and he may consume as much time as I did. The second place you went to was the Justice Department. And you went to that department headed by a man, Bill Barr, who was also implicated in the complaint. And you knew that when you went to the Department of Justice for an opinion, correct? That Bill Barr was mentioned in the complaint?
Mr. Chairman, I went to the Office of Legal Counsel in consultation with the ICIG. He was a part of that to receive whether or not this met the criteria.
Yes, but that ICIG vehemently disagreed with the opinion of the Bill Barr Justice Department, did he not?
He still considered it a matter of urgent concern. However, as you know, opinions from Department of Justice, Office of Legal Counsel, are binding on all of us in the executive branch.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think it's appropriate that you go to a department run by someone who's the subject of the complaint to get advice, or who is a subject of the complaint or implicated in the complaint, for advice as to whether you should provide that complaint to Congress? Did that conflict of interest concern you?
Mr. Chairman, when I saw this report and complaint, immediately I knew that this was a serious matter. It came to me, and I just thought it would be prudent
I'm just asking if the conflict of interest concerned you.
No,
that
sir. Well, sir, I have to work with what I've got, and that is the Office of Legal Counsel within the executive branch.
Well, you also had was a statute that says shall, and even then you said you had the discretion to provide it, but did not.
Because it did not meet the matter of urgent concern that took away the 7-day timeline, I have endeavored to work with the Office of Legal Counsel in order to get the material to you, which you have provided to you yesterday. Now, I have to tell you, Chairman, it is not perhaps at the timeline that I would have desired, or you, but the Office of Legal Counsel has to make sure they make prudent decisions. And yesterday, when the President released the transcripts of his call with the President of the Ukraine, then they could no longer, executive privilege no longer applied. And that is when I was free to be able to send the complaint to the committee.
Director, you don't believe the whistleblower is a political hack, do you?
I don't know who the whistleblower is, Mr. Chairman, to be honest with you. I've done my utmost to make sure that I protect his anonymity.
That doesn't sound like much of a defense of the whistleblower here, someone you found did everything right. You don't believe the whistleblower is a political hack, do you, Director?
I believe that, as I said before, Mr. Chairman, I believe the whistleblower is operating in good faith.
Well, then they couldn't be.
The law.
They couldn't be in good faith if they were acting as a political hack, could they?
Mr. Chairman, my job is to support and lead the entire intelligence community. That individual works for me. Therefore, it is my job to make sure that I support and defend that person.
You don't have any reason to accuse them of disloyalty to our country or suggest they're beholden to some other country, do you?
Sir, absolutely not. I believe that the whistleblower followed the steps every step of the way. However, the statute was one in this situation involving the President of the United States, who is not in the intelligence community, or matters underneath my supervision, did not meet the criteria for urgent concern.
Well, I'm just asking about the whistleblower right now.
I think the whistleblower did the right thing. I think he followed the law every step of the way. And we just got stuck with...
Director, when the President called the whistleblower a political hack and suggested that he or she might be disloyal to the country, why did you remain silent?
I did not remain silent, Mr. Chairman. I issued a statement to my workforce telling and committing my commitment to the whistleblower protection and ensuring that I would provide protection to anybody within the intelligence community who comes forward. But the way this thing was blowing out, I didn't think it was appropriate for me to be making a press statement so that we counter each other every step of the way.
I think it was not only appropriate, but there's nothing that would have given more confidence to the workforce than to hearing you publicly say, no one should be calling this professional who did the right thing a hack or a traitor or anything else. I think that would have meant a great deal to the workforce. Mr. Himes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director McGuire, thank you for being here, and thank you for your profound service and the service of your family to this country. Director, what I find bewildering about this whole conversation is that we are not sitting here today, and the American public is not aware of the allegations of the president asking for a favor of investigation into his political opponent. We're not aware of the murky decision to withhold aid. We're not aware of Mr. Giuliani's apparent establishment of a personal State Department. We are not aware of a possible retaliation against a U.S. ambassador. None of this happens but for the decision of your Inspector General, Michael Atkinson, a man who was appointed by President Trump and confirmed by a Republican Senate, to come to this committee 7 days after the complaint was required by law to be transmitted to us. It was his decision, personal decision, not the kaleidoscope of fantabulistic conspiracy theories the ranking member thinks is happening here, but it was the decision of Michael Atkinson, an appointee of this president, to come to this committee following not advice from you or any law, but following his own conscience. Without his decision to do this, none of this is happening, correct?
I applaud Michael's the way he has done this. He has acted in good faith. He has followed the law every step of the way. The question is, Congressman, did it or did it not meet the legal definition?
No, sir. I asked a very different question, which was, without his decision, it's a simple question. Without his decision, none of this is happening. Is that correct?
Well, we got to back up to the whistleblower as well. So.
Okay, and I should have noted that the whistleblower also deserves the same accolades that Mr. Atkinson does. Director, were you ever advised by the White House not to provide this complaint to Congress for any reason?
No, Congressman.
Okay. And as I understand it, the opinion was that you were not obligated to convey, despite the very clear wording of the law, to convey the complaint to Congress. So the decision was taken to defy a subpoena of this Congress, the subpoena of September 17th, to turn over the complaint. Who made the decision to defy that subpoena of September 17th?
Congressman, urgent concern.
Sir, I'm asking a very simple question. Who made the decision to defy the congressional subpoena? Somebody said we will not abide by this subpoena, and I'd like to know who that somebody was.
Congressman, nobody did. I endeavored, once we no longer had urgent concern with the 7-day timeline, you know, to work to get the information to the committee. What I needed to do was to get work through the executive privilege hurdles with the Office of Legal Counsel at the White House. Although this was the most important issue to me, you know, the White House has got quite a few other issues that they were dealt with. You know, I would have liked to have had, as I said to the chairman, that perhaps this moved a little faster than it did, but this is a very deliberate process, and finally, you know, it came to a head yesterday. So with, you know, when I received the information on the 26th of August, we had 7 days based on the Whistleblower Protection Act. All we did was lose those 7 days. It may have taken longer than we would have liked, or you would have liked, but you have the information.
So, sir, I'm focused on the subpoena.
Yes, sir.
The subpoena is on your desk. It's a subpoena of the Congress of the United States. It's pretty clear in what it asks for. You're saying that a decision was never taken not to comply with that subpoena, and yet somehow it wasn't complied with. I'm looking for the decision-making process to ignore a legal congressional subpoena.
Congressman, I did not ignore. I dealt with the chairman of this committee and asked to have one more week to be able to do what I needed to do to get this information released. He was gracious enough, and this committee was also very supportive. It wasn't something that it was ready to go, but I was committed, fully committed to this committee and to the chairman to get that information, and I finally was able to provide that yesterday.
Okay, thank you, Director. Director, did you or your office ever speak to the President of the United States about this complaint?
Congressman, I'm the President's intelligence officer. I speak with him several times throughout the week.
Okay. Sir, let me repeat my question. Did you ever speak to the President about this complaint?
My conversations with the President, because I'm the Director of National Intelligence, are privileged, and it would be inappropriate for me because it would destroy my relationship with the President in intelligence matters to divulge any of my conversations with the President of the United States.
But just so we can be clear for the record, you are not denying that you spoke to the President about this complaint?
What I'm saying, Congressman, is that I will not divulge privileged conversations that I have as the Director of National Intelligence with the President.
Has the White House instructed you to assert that privilege?
No, sir. Okay. That's just a member of the Executive Committee, Executive Branch, as a member of the National Security Council, and also the Homeland Committee. And I just have to maintain the discretion and protect the conversation with the President of the United States.
Thank you, sir. Director. I appreciate that answer. Apparently the clock is broken, but I will yield back the balance of my time.
Thank you, Congressman.
Mr. Conaway.
You have lawyers on your staff? Sir?
I do, Congressman.
All right, and your lawyers have looked at this urgent concern definition thoroughly and have given you advice?
Yes, Congressman.
If the black letter law was so clear in black letter, how is it that we've got different attorneys giving us, you and I, different opinions? That's a rhetorical question that with respect to this issue. Just to clarify, Mike Atkinson was in our group in front of us last week, did a very good job of telling us what he did and what he didn't do. We now know for sure what it is that he was able to do. As part of his investigation, he did not request records of the call from the President. And the reason he did is he cited the difficulty of working through all of that would have probably meant that he couldn't comply with the 14-day time frame. So even he did not try to overrun the White House's executive privilege over the conversation that the President had with President Zelensky. He also said in his letter, I also determined, this is quoting Michael, I also determined that there were reasonable grounds to believe that information relating to the urgent concern appeared credible. Now, that's a different statement than a flat-out, it's credible. Just, again, a rhetorical statement. Is there anything in statute from your lawyers in advising you that says that the determination of urgent concern lies solely with the ICIG?
No, sir. I was never advised by my legal counsel to that effect.
All right. To your knowledge, has the Justice Department ever weighed in to say that the fact that DNI can't make a separate decision with respect to that 7-day process, that the matter is not of urgent concern, as your team decided?
The matter of urgent concern is a legally defining term. It's pretty much either yes or no.
Well, apparently that's not the case, Admiral, because IG said it was, and you're saying it's not under that legal definition because it involved the President. Last time I checked, you're pretty familiar with chains of command, I know. He's not in your chain of command. You're in his chain of command. And so for very definite reasons, appear to be credible, it doesn't meet the statutorily urgent concern definition with respect to the whistleblower protections of the IG. And your team made that call. The Inspector General made a different call.
No, sir. My team did not
John,
make the decision. Ratcliffe? It was the Department of Justice, Office of Legal Counsel, that made the determination that it was not urgent concern. All we wanted to do was just check and see. And to me, it just seemed prudent with the matter at hand right now to be able to just make sure that, in fact, it did. And when it didn't, I want to say once again, I endeavored to get that information to this committee.
Okay, sir, just to clarify the role that the Inspector General had with respect to the Department of Justice, I heard you say that he was involved in the conversations, allowed to make his case, but also said you gave him the letter, gave the Justice Department the letter. What was his exact involvement in making his case to Justice Department to his decision? Was he actually there present physically, or his lawyers there?
To the best of my knowledge, the ICIG's transmit a letter, as well as the complaint from the whistleblower, were forwarded to the Office of Legal Counsel for their determination. I believe that is what they based their opinion on.
Okay, so you don't think he had a personal...
If I'm incorrect, I will come back to the committee and correct that, sir.
Okay, appreciate that.
Ms. Sewell.
I want to turn to what I fear may be one of the most damaging long-term effects of this whistleblower episode, and that is the chilling effect that it will have on others in government who may witness misconduct, but now may be afraid to come forward to report it. Sir, I'm worried that government employees and contractors may see how important this situation has played out and decide it's not worth putting themselves on the line. The fact that a whistleblower followed all of the proper procedures to report misconduct, and then the Department of Justice and the White House seems to have weighed in to keep the complaint hidden, is problematic, sir. I want to know whether or not you see how problematic this will be and having a chilling effect on members of the IC that you are sworn to represent and ostensibly protect.
Congresswoman, I think that's a fair assessment. I don't disagree with what you've said. I have endeavored to transmit to the intelligence community my support, the whistleblowers, and I'm quite sure that for at least 2 hours this morning, there are not many people in the intelligence community who are doing anything that's productive besides watching this.
Right. And so my concern, I think, is a valid one, that, in fact, what has happened with this whistleblower episode will have a chilling effect. I just also want to ask you, have you given direction to this whistleblower that he can, in fact, or he or she can, in fact, come before Congress? Director, when the president called the whistleblower a political hack and suggested that he or she was potentially disloyal to the country, you remained silent. I'm not sure why, but I also think that that adds to the chilling effect. The statute seems pretty clear that everybody has a role to play. The process seems pretty clear. And part of it also includes you directing the whistleblower of his or her protected rights. Can you confirm that you've directed that whistleblower that he or she can come before Congress?
Well, Congresswoman, there are several questions there. One, I do not know the identity of the whistleblower. Two, now that the complaint has come forward, we are working with his counsel in order to be able to provide them with security clearance.
So, sir, I think it's pretty, my question is pretty simple. Can you assure this committee and the American public that the whistleblower is authorized to speak to the committee with the full protections of the Whistleblower Act? Can you confirm that? That's a yes or no question.
Right now, I'm working through that with the chair, and to the best of my ability, I believe the chair was asking to have the whistleblower come forward, and I'm working with counsel, with the committee, to support that.
Can you assure the American public that the end result will be that the whistleblower will be able to come before this committee and Congress and have the full protections of the whistleblower? After all, what is the whistleblower statute for, if not to provide those full protections against retaliation, against litigation?
Congresswoman, I am doing everything to endeavor to support that.
Will the gentlewoman yield?
Yes.
Director, do I have your assurance that once you work out the security clearances for the whistleblower's counsel, that whistleblower will be able to relate the full facts within his knowledge that concern wrongdoing by the president or anyone else, that he or she will not be inhibited in what they can tell our committee, that there will not be some minder from the White House or elsewhere sitting next to them telling them what they can answer or not answer? Do I have your assurance that the whistleblower will be able to testify fully and freely and enjoy the protections of the law?
Yes, Congressman.
Mr. Turner.
I'd like for you to to turn for a moment and tell us your thoughts of the whistleblower process and the concerns as to why it has to be there so that the intelligence community can be held accountable and we can have oversight. Because it certainly wasn't there for oversight of the president. It was there for oversight for the intelligence community. So if you could describe your thoughts on that. And then I was very interested in your discussion but on the issue of executive privilege, because there's been much made of the fact that the law says on the whistleblower statute that you shall. Clearly you have a conflict of laws when you have both the executive privilege issue and the issue of the word shall. So first, could you tell us the importance of the whistleblower statute with respect to accountability of the intelligence community? And our role of oversight there, and then your process, effects of being stuck in the middle where you have these conflicts of laws, Mr. Director.
Congressman, the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act is to apply to the intelligence community. And then it pertains to financial, administrative, or operational activities within the intelligence community under the oversight and responsibility of the Director of National Intelligence. It does not allow a member of the intelligence community to report any wrongdoing that comes from anywhere in the federal government. I do believe that is about the Intelligence Whistleblower Protection Act was the best vehicle that the whistleblower had to use. And it came to me and discussion with our ICIG, who is a colleague. And the determination was made, you know, by the, that he viewed that it was, in fact, credible and that it was a matter of urgent concern. And I just thought it would be prudent to have another opinion. I have worked with lawyers my whole career, whether it was the rule of armed conflict, admiralty claims, or rules of engagement, or just the Uniform Code of Military Justice. And I have found that different lawyers have different opinions on the same subject. We have 9 justices of the Supreme Court. More often than not, the opinions are 5-4. That doesn't mean that 5 are right and 4 are wrong. There are differences of opinion. But when this matter came to me, I have a lot of life experience. I realized the importance of the matter that is before us this morning. And I thought that it would be prudent for me to ensure that, in fact, it met that statute before I sent it forward in compliance with the Whistleblower Protection Act. And I hope that responds to your question, sir.
I yield back. Mr. Carson.
Director McGuire, this appears to be the first intelligence community whistleblower complaint that has ever been withheld from Congress. Is that right, sir?
Congressman Carson, I believe that it might be. And once again, I said in my statement, it is, in fact, as far as I'm concerned, unprecedented.
It is unprecedented, sir. Do you know why it's unprecedented? I think it's because the law that Congress, that this very committee drafted, really couldn't be clearer. It states that upon receiving such an urgent complaint from the Inspector General, you, the Director of National Intelligence, quote, shall, end quote, forward it to the Intel Committees within 7 days, no ifs, ands, or buts. And even when the IG has found complaints not to be an urgent concern or even credible, your office has consistently and uniformly still transmitted those complaints to the intelligence committees. Is that right, sir?
Congressman Carson, in the past, even if they were not a matter of urgent concern or whether they were not credible, they were forwarded. But in each and every instance prior to this, it involved members of the intelligence community who were serving in organizations underneath the control of the DNI. This one is different because it did not meet those two criteria.
Yes.
Director, does executive privilege, sir, in your mind, or laws that regulate the intelligence community preempt or negate even the laws that safeguard the security of America's democratic elections and her democracy itself, sir?
No, Chairman Carson, it does not.
Notwithstanding, Director, this unambiguous mandate and the consistent practice of your office that you withheld this urgent complaint from Congress at the direction of the White House and the Justice Department, you follow their orders instead of the law. And if the Inspector General had not brought this complaint to our attention, you and the Trump administration might have gotten away with this unprecedented action. Sir, you released a statement yesterday affirming your oath to the Constitution and your dedication to the rule of law. But I'm having trouble understanding how that statement can be true in light of the facts here. Can you explain that to us, sir?
Congressman Carson, a couple of things. The White House did not direct me to withhold the information. Neither did the Office of Legal Counsel. That opinion has been unclassified and has been disseminated. The question came down to urgent concern, which is a legal definition. It doesn't mean, is it important? Is it timely? Urgent concern met the certain criteria that we've discussed several times here. So it did not. And all that did, sir, was then just take away the 7 days. Now, as I said before, just because it was not forwarded to this committee does not mean that it went unanswered. The ICIG and the Justice Department referred it to the Federal Bureau of Investigation for investigation. So this is not the, and that was working while I was endeavoring to get the executive privilege concerns addressed so that it can then be forwarded. It was not stonewalling. I didn't receive direction from anybody. I was just trying to work through the process and the law the way it is written. I have to comply with the way the law is, not the way some people would like it to be. And if I could do otherwise, it would have been much more convenient for me, Congressman.
And lastly, Director, as you sit here today, sir, do you commit to providing every single whistleblower complaint intended for Congress to the Intelligence Committees as required by the statute, sir?
If it's required by the statute, Congressman Carson, yes, I will.
Director, you were not directed to withhold the complaint. Is that your testimony?
Yes, that's absolutely true.
So you exercise your discretion to withhold the complaint from the committee?
I did not, sir. What I did was I delayed it because it did not meet the statutory definition of urgent concern, and I was working through.
And Director, you're aware, you spent a lot of time focusing on the definition of urgent concern. You're aware that the practice of your office has been that regardless of whether the complaint meets the definition of urgent concern, regardless of whether Inspector General founds it credible or incredible, the complaint is always given to our committee. You're aware that's the unbroken practice since the establishment of your office and the Inspector General. Are you aware of that?
Chairman, every previous whistleblower complaint that was forwarded to the Intelligence Committees involved a member of the intelligence community and an organization under which the Director of National Intelligence had authority and responsibility.
But you're aware that the past practice has been, we're talking about urgent concern here, that whether you or the Inspector General or anybody else believes it meets the statutory definition, the past practice has always been to give it to this committee. You're aware of that, right?
I am aware that this is unprecedented,
okay.
And this has never happened.
And
with that, sir, I agree. This has never happened before, but then again, this is a unique situation.
But you, Director, made the decision. You made the decision to withhold it from the committee for a month when the White House had made no claim of executive privilege, when the Department of Justice said, you don't have to give it to them, but you can. You made the decision not to.
No, not true, sir. What the Office of Legal Counsel said, that it does not meet the legal definition of urgent concern.
So it said you're not required. It didn't say you cannot provide it. It said you're not required to. That is, if you don't want to, we're not going to force you. You're not required. But it didn't say you can't. Am I right?
What it allowed me, and I said that in my opening statement, but even so, it was referred to the FBI for investigation. And I was endeavoring to get the information to you, Mr. Chairman, but I could not forward it as a member of the executive branch without executive privileges being addressed. And I feel that the White House counsel was doing the best that they could in order to get that. And it took longer than I would have liked, that's for sure. But that came to a conclusion yesterday with the release of the transcripts, and because the transcripts were released, then no longer was there a situation of executive privilege, and I was then free to send both the Inspector General's cover letter and the complaint to you.
Dr.
But there's no time was there any intent on my part, sir, ever, to withhold the information from you as the chair, this committee, or the Senate Intelligence Committee.
Director, I wish I had the confidence of knowing that but for this hearing, but for the deadline that we were forced to set with this hearing, that we would have been provided that complaint. But I don't know that we would have ever seen that complaint. Dr. Wenstrup.
You said this executive privilege is unwaverable, and I think that's kind of consistent with CIA Director Brennan was implying.
Congressman, only the White House and the President can waive executive privilege. The President exerts executive privilege, and only the White House and the President can waive that.
So, Director Brennan gave me the impression then that that was like, that's the rule, that's the law, so I'm going to have to go with that. But do you believe the President's entitled to withhold his or her communications from Congress if the conversation is used in a whistleblower case?
I think that the President, when he conducts diplomacy and deals with foreign heads of state, he has every right to be able to have that information be held within the White House and the executive branch. And if yesterday, I think the transmission of the call is unprecedented, and it's also, I think, that other future leaders, when they interact with our head of state, might be more cautious in what they say and reduce the interaction that they have with the President because of that release.
So we may need to change our process here, because I guess if a decision regarding executive privilege, maybe it should be made prior to submitting the communication to Congress.
Well, either that, I believe that this committee wrote the law, and based on what we're doing today, you know, perhaps it needs to be relooked. I don't know. I leave that to the legislative branch.
So also, if we may need to change process, you know, the 14 days, that might be kind of tough to adhere to. So I think maybe, you know, this is a special circumstance, unprecedented. Maybe there should be some leeway in the time frame instead of the narrow 14 days. And I don't know if you know, did you feel or did the IG ever say that they felt rushed to making a decision because of the 14-day process?
No, Congressman, I believe that he's a very experienced inspector general. He's used to dealing with the 14-day process. And when you work under a timeline like that, he worked with his staff and I think endeavored to the extent, because he was following the statute as he believed it was written.
Ms. Speer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Director McGuire, for your extraordinarily long service to our country. At any point during this process, did you personally threaten to resign if the complaint was not provided to the committee?
No, Congressman, I did not, and I know that that story has appeared quite a bit, and I issued a statement yesterday.
All right, thank you. When you read the complaint, were you shocked at all by what you read?
Congresswoman, as I said, I had a lot of life experience. I joined the Navy.
I understand your record. Could you just answer it?
Well, what I mean is, I realized full and well, the importance of the allegation. And I also have to tell you, Congresswoman, when I saw that, I anticipated having to sit in front of some committee sometime to discuss it.
All right. The complaint refers to what happened after the July 25th conversation between the Ukraine president and the president of the United States. And the White House lawyers ordered other staff to move the transcript from its typical repository to a more secure location in order to lock down, and that was the term used in the complaint, all records of the phone call. Did that reaction to the transcript seem to you like a recognition within the White House that the call was completely improper?
Congresswoman, I have no firsthand knowledge of that. All I have is the knowledge that the whistleblower alleges in his allegation, the whistleblower complaint. I don't know whether, in fact, that is true or not. My only knowledge and situation awareness of that is from the whistleblower's letter.
So knowing that the whistleblower appeared to be credible based on the evaluation by the Inspector General, And knowing that that effort was undertaken by the White House to cover it up, why would you then, as your first action outside of the intelligence community, go directly to the White House, to the very entity that was being scrutinized and complained about in the complaint? Why would you go there to ask their advice as to what you should do?
Congresswoman, the allegation that is made by the whistleblower is secondhand information, not known to him or her firsthand.
Except, Mr. McGuire, it was determined to be credible. There was an investigation done by the Inspector General. Let me go on to another issue. President Trump, over the weekend, tweeted, "It appears that an American spy in one of our intelligence agencies may have been spying on our own president." Do you believe that the whistleblower was spying on one of our intelligence agencies or spying on the president?
As I said several times so far this morning, I believe that the whistleblower complied with the law and did everything that they thought he or she thought was responsible under the Intelligence Community Whistleblower Protection Act.
But you did not speak out to protect the whistleblower, did you?
Congresswoman, I spoke
out. Yes or no, sir?
I did, yes. I did within my own workforce. I thought that there was enough stuff that was appearing out in the press that was erroneous, that was absolutely incorrect, and I didn't think that I needed to respond to every single statement that was out there that was incorrect. So what I did is my loyalty is to my workforce.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
The president on Monday said, also, who is this so-called whistleblower? Who knows the correct facts? Is he on our country's side? Do you believe the whistleblower is on our country's side?
I believe that the whistleblower and all employees who come forward in the ICIG to raise concerns of fraud, waste, and abuse are doing what they perceive to be the right thing.
So, working on behalf of our country. Are you aware of the fact that whistleblowers within the federal government have identified waste, fraud, and abuse of over $59 billion that has had the effect of benefiting the taxpayers and keeping our country safe as well?
Congresswoman, I'm not familiar with the dollar value, but having been in the government service for nearly four decades, I am very much aware of the value of the whistleblower program.
Let me ask you one final question. Did the President of the United States ask you to find out the identity of the whistleblower?
I can say, although I would not normally discuss my conversations with the President, I can tell you emphatically, no.
Has anyone else within the White House or the Department of Justice asked you?
No, Congresswoman.
Thank you. I yield.
You're welcome, ma'am.
Mr. Stewart.
Are you motivated by politics in your work or your professional behavior?
Excuse me, sir. I'm sorry.
Are you motivated by politics in your work or your professional behavior?
No, Congressman.
Okay,
not at all.
I'm just going to leave it there.
I am not. I am not political. I am not partisan. And I did not look to be sitting here as the acting director of national intelligence. I thought that there were perhaps other people who would be best and more qualified to do that. But the president asked me to do this, and it was my honor to step up, and for the however long I'm doing it, to lead and support the intelligence community.
Okay, thank you. Do you believe that you have followed the laws and policies and precedent in the way you've handled this complaint?
I do. I know I do.
Have you in any way sought to protect the president or anyone else from any wrongdoing?
I have not. What I have done is endeavor to follow the law.
Thank you. Do you believe that you had a legal responsibility to follow the guidance of the Office of Legal Counsel?
The opinion of the Office of Legal Counsel is binding on the executive branch.
Thank you.
Mr. Quigley.
As you know, those in public life who work and deal with other countries, ambassadors, secretaries of state, many in the intelligence field, they're vetted. They go for approval before the Senate. They have to get clearance. And you understand the policy reasons for that, correct?
Yes, Congressman.
Do you have any issues with civilians without approval, without vetting, without clearance, taking on those roles?
Yes, I do, Congressman.
And why would you have those concerns?
Well, in order to be able to handle sensitive information, whether it be diplomatic or certainly intelligence information, one must be vetted. this is the important part of protecting national security. In order to, we just can't bring people in and automatically wave a magic wand to put holy water on them to give them a security clearance. It is a matter of vetting. For me, to come back into government, the FBI went back for 15 years, in my background, examined all of my financial records to make sure that I was, in fact, worthy of having an intelligence clearance. And we do the same thing with the intelligence community. Everybody who is subject or everybody who is privileged to have access to intelligence information is a sacred trust. The American people expect us to keep them safe, as I said earlier. In order to do that, we need to ensure that any person who has access to this sensitive information of the United States has been thoroughly vetted to ensure that they are able to handle that information.
It's not just the intel issues. It's the issues of national policy, that people have an official role that they carry out on behalf of the United States, and we know what their role is, correct?
Yes, Congressman, I would.
What is your understanding right now of what Mr. Giuliani's role is?
Mr. Congressman, Congressman Quigley, I respectfully just refer to the White House to comment on the president's personal lawyer.
Okay. So far what I've declaimed is you see that he's his personal lawyer. We read in the complaint, we read in this modified transcript, he's mentioned five times. Your reaction to the fact that this civilian, without any of these vetting, has played this role?
No, sir. All I'm saying is that I know what the allegations are. I'm not saying that the allegations are true, and that's where the committee...
I don't think there's any question the credibility of the complaint that's in the transcript. The president mentions and speaks highly of Mr. Giuliani, a highly respected man. He was the mayor of New York, a great mayor. I would like him to call you. I will ask him to call you along with the attorney general. Your reaction to the civilian dealing with these. In the complaint, it talks about our national security. Inspector General talks about this as the highest responsibility among those that the DNI has, and obviously Mr. Giuliani is playing this role. To your knowledge, does he have security clearance?
I don't know. Congressman Quigley, I'm neither aware or unaware whether or not Mr. Giuliani has a security clearance.
Before this all happened, were you aware of his role or understanding what his role was doing what you do?
Congressman Quigley, my only knowledge of what Mr. Giuliani does, I have to be honest with you, I get from TV and from the news media, I am not aware of what he does, in fact, for the president.
Are you aware of any communication by Mr. Giuliani and your office about how he should proceed with this role, given the classified nature, the national security implications that are in the complaint, that are in the transcript, in the role that he is playing?
Well, I have read the transcripts just as you have, so my knowledge of his activity in there is just limited to the conversation that the president had with the president of Ukraine.
So we respect your role, and while we have differences of opinion, we continue to respect your integrity and your honor. But we have this vast amount of experience you have, and we need to understand how it plays juxtaposition with the complaint. I'm reading, an OMB official informed departments and agencies that the president earlier that month had issued instructions to suspend all U.S. security assistance to Ukraine. Your reaction to that?
Congressman Quigley, I think that anything that has to do with the president's lawyer in these matters should be referred to the White House and the president for that.
Well, no, I'm just reading the reading the complaint.
I lead and I support the intelligence community and the 17 different departments and agencies underneath my leadership. I do not lead the president, and I have no authority or responsibility over the White House.
But you are aware, with all your experience, of the fact that we have this relationship with Ukraine, that they are dependent upon us, and this complaint doesn't concern you. You can't say that publicly, that it concerns you?
There's a lot of things that concern me. I'm the Director of National Intelligence. And this one here, though, I just have to defer back to the conversation that the president had is his conversation. How the president of the United States wants to conduct diplomacy is his business. And it's not whether or not I approve it or disapprove of it. That is the president's business on how he wants to conduct that, sir.
Ms. Stefanik.
Thank you, Mr. McGuire. Thank you for being here. We appreciate your life of public service. My question relates to prior to the transmission on August 26th from the IG to the DNI, were there any conversations that you had with the IG prior to August 26th related to this matter?
Congresswoman, there's been a lot that's happened in the last several weeks. As far as the timeline is concerned, I think that I'd like to take that and get back to you and give you a full chronology, if I may, on the actual timeline of events.
That will be very helpful to this committee in terms of if there were any preliminary conversations, what was discussed, and if there was any action taken as a result of those conversations. I want to turn to the complaint itself, which is made public for the American public to read. And let me preface this by saying that I greatly appreciate your statement that you believe the whistleblower is operating in good faith. I think that's very important for Americans to hear. But on page one, and I'm not going to improvise for parody purposes like the chairman of this committee did, I'm going to quote it directly. On page one, the complaint reads, quote, "I was not a direct witness to most of the events described." This seems like a very important line to look into, and I think the American public will have questions in particular about that line. So my question to you is, for the record, did the IG fully investigate the allegations into this complaint at this time? Has the IG fully investigated the allegations in this complaint?
As I said earlier, Congresswoman, I believe that the Intelligence Community Inspector General did a thorough investigation with the 14-day time frame that he had, and under that timeline, to the best of his ability, made the determination that it was both credible and urgent. I have no reason to doubt that Michael Atkinson did anything but his job.
Sure. So when you talk about a full investigation, were the veracity of the allegations in the complaint looked into? There were many references to White House officials. Do you know if the IG spoke with those White House officials? Do you know if he investigated, again, the truthfulness of these allegations? Or was it a preliminary investigation?
Congresswoman, I'd have to defer to the IG to respond to you on that. But although I do not know the identity of the whistleblower, I do know that Michael Atkinson had, in fact, discussed this with the whistleblower and found his complaint to be credible. As far as who else he spoke with, I am unaware of what went on in Michael Atkinson's investigation into this matter.
So as of today, the only individual that we know the IG spoke with is the author and the whistleblower.
No, Congresswoman, what I'm saying is I am unaware who else Michael Atkinson may have spoken to. I'm just unfamiliar with his investigative process and everybody that he spoke to in this regard.
Mr. Swalwell.
Thank you. Mr. McGuire, do you agree that the definition of a cover-up is an attempt to prevent people from discovering a crime?
I'd say that's close. I mean, I'm sure there's others one, but I don't disagree with that, sir.
And in the whistleblower's complaint, the whistleblower alleges that immediately after the president's call with the president of Ukraine on July 25, White House lawyers moved quickly to direct White House officials to move electronic transcripts from one computer system where it was normally stored to a secret classified information system. Is that right?
Congresswoman, excuse me, sir, I apologize. Congressman,
is that what was alleged in the whistleblower complaint?
Congressman,
yes or no?
Sir, all I know is that is the allegation.
Is that what I'm asking you? That's what's alleged.
That's the allegation.
And you read that allegation, and the first people that you go to after you read that allegation are the White House lawyers who are telling the White House officials who see this transcript and move it into a secret compartmentalized system. Those are the first people you go to.
Well, let's say a couple of things.
Is that yes or no?
Yes, but
okay.
Also,
I'm gonna keep going here. So you get this complaint. Inspector General says urgent, credible. You have no wiggle room to not go to Congress, and instead you send your concern to the subject of the complaint, the White House. So did the White House tell you after you sent your concern about privilege, did they tell you to go to the Department of Justice next?
My team, my counsel, in consultation with the Intelligence Community Inspector General, went to the Office of Legal Counsel.
So,
and we were not directed to do that.
And Mr. McGuire, you said that this did not involve ongoing intelligence activities. However, the whistleblower says that this is not the first time that the president's transcripts with foreign leaders were improperly moved to an intelligence community code word system. Is that a part of the allegation?
I believe that's in the letter, and I will let the letter speak for itself, sir.
Well, what can also speak for itself is that if a transcript with a foreign leader is improperly moved into an intelligence community classification system, that actually would involve your responsibilities. Is that right?
Not necessarily. That is, I do not. It is not underneath my authority and responsibility. And once again, this is an allegation that has been made, does not necessarily mean that that is a true statement.
And the allegation was determined to be urgent and credible by the Inspector General. Is that right?
Yes, it was.
So would you also want to know, though, considering that you are the Director of National Intelligence and transcripts are being moved into a secret intelligence system, whether other transcripts, perhaps maybe the president's phone calls with Vladimir Putin, with MBS of Saudi Arabia or Erdogan of Turkey or Kim Jong-un, would you want to know if those are also being improperly moved because the president is trying to cover up something?
Congressman, how the White House, the office of the executive office of the president, and the National Security Council conduct their business is their business.
Well, it's actually your business to protect America's secrets. Is that right?
It's all of ours, this committee as well.
And if there's cover-up activity because the president is working improperly with a foreign government, that could compromise America's secrets. Is that right?
Congressman, there is an allegation of a cover-up. I'm sure an investigation and before this committee might lend credence or just prove that. But right now, all we have is an allegation for secondhand information from a whistleblower. I have no knowledge on whether or not that is true and accurate statement.
The Department of Justice opinion you relied upon said that you are not responsible for preventing foreign election interference. Is that right? That was in the opinion.
What the Office of Legal Counsel did was over 11 pages
opinion
defining and explaining their justification for it not complying with urgent concern.
Are you responsible for preventing election interference?
Election interference.
By a foreign government.
Congressman, election interference.
I hope you know this answer is yes or no. Are you responsible for preventing election interference?
My election interference is
the top priority
in the intelligence community.
Is it your priority, though?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So this complaint also alleges a shakedown with a foreign government by the United States president involving a rogue actor, as Mr. Quigley pointed out, who has no clearance, no authority under the United States, and an effort by the White House to move the transcript of this call to a secret system. Is that right? That's at least what's alleged.
Congressman, I believe that election security is my most fundamental priority. However, this complaint focused on a conversation by the president with another foreign leader, not election security.
And if that conversation involved the president requesting help in the form of intervention in our election, is that not an issue of interference in our election?
Chairman, once again, this was sent to the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
No, I understand that, but you're not suggesting, are you, that the president is somehow immune from the laws that preclude a U.S. person from seeking foreign help in a U.S. election, are you?
What I am saying, Chairman Schiff, is that none of us is above the law in this country.
Mr. Hurd.
A specific question. The letter that's contained in the whistleblower package is actually dated August 12th, and I recognize this may be a better question to be asking the ICIG. That letter is dated August 12th, and it's to the chairman of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence and to the chairman of this committee. Do you know if the whistleblower provided that letter to those two chairmen concurrently with the ICIG?
No, Congressman. As I said earlier, I believe that the whistleblower and the ICIG acted in good faith and followed the law every step of the way.
Good copy. We've talked about the way the law on the whistleblower statute is says you shall share if it's decided to be an urgent concern. However, best practices has always been to share regardless of whether that urgent concern. Do you see any reason, a negative impact on the intelligence community if that legislation was changed to say all whistleblower complaints should be shared with the committees?
That's correct. And in addition to that, Congressman, I mean, let's just say the allegation was made against a member of this committee. Members of this committee, although you are on the Intelligence Committee, are not members of the intelligence community. And as the DNI, I have no authority or responsibility over this committee.
But my question is, do you think that if every whistleblower complaint that was brought to the Intelligence Community Inspector General was always shared with this committee, would that have any impact on intelligence equities? And I ask that because I don't know why, when the statute was written, that it didn't say all should be shared rather than only urgent concern. And my question to you as the head of the intelligence community, do you think if we change that law, would it have impact on intelligence equities?
I don't think that a law could be changed to cover all things that might possibly happen. I think we have a good law. I think it is well written. However, as I said, Congressman, this is unprecedented, and this is a unique situation. Why we're sitting here this morning.
I apologize for a lot of these legal questions that may be best directed at somebody else, but I feel like you have a perspective. When does OLC, Office of Legislative...
Legal Counsel,
guidance override laws passed by Congress?
The Office of Legal Counsel does not override laws passed by Congress. What it does is it passes legal opinion for those of us who are in the executive branch. And the Office of Legal Counsel, legal opinion, is binding to everyone within the executive branch.
Mr. Castro.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you, Director McGuire, for your testimony today. I want to say thank you also to the whistleblower for having the courage and the bravery to come forward on behalf of the nation. Thank you to Mr. Atkinson, also the Inspector General, for his courage in coming forward to Congress. You mentioned that you believe that the whistleblower's report is credible, that the whistleblower is credible, that the whistleblower acted in good faith. You've had a chance now, as we have, and I believe the American people have, had an opportunity to review both the whistleblower complaint and the transcript that was released of the phone call between the President of the United States and the President of the Ukraine. You've read both documents by now, haven't you?
Yes, Congressman.
Would you say that the whistleblower's complaint is remarkably consistent with the transcript that was released?
I would say that the whistleblower's complaint is in alignment with what was released yesterday by the President.
Okay. I want to read you a quick section of both to underscore exactly how accurate and consistent this complaint is. On page 2 of the whistleblower's complaint, the whistleblower says, according to the White House officials who had direct knowledge of the call, the President pressured Mr. Zelensky to, and then there's a few bullet points. The first one says, initiate or continue an investigation into the activities of former Vice President Joseph Biden and his son Hunter Biden. Then the third bullet point, meet or speak with two people the President named explicitly as his personal envoys on these matters, Mr. Giuliani and Attorney General Barr, to whom the President referred multiple times in tandem. In the transcript that was released on page 4 of the first paragraph into what looks like the third sentence, President Trump says, the former ambassador from the United States, the woman, was bad news, and the people she was dealing with in the Ukraine were bad news, so I just want to let you know that. The other thing, there's a lot of talk about Biden's son, that Biden stopped the prosecution, and a lot of people want to find out about that. So whatever you can do with the Attorney General would be great. Biden went around bragging that he stopped the prosecution, etc. Do you have reason to doubt what the whistleblower has brought forward?
Getting back into Michael Atkinson's determination on whether or not it was credible or urgent concern, as the DNI, it is not my place to ensure that it is credible. That is the ICIG's job as the inspector. He has determined that it is credible. My only trouble was that, in fact, it involves someone who is not in the intelligence community or in an organization under which I have authority and responsibility.
But Director McGuire, you agree that it involved intelligence matters, it involved an issue of election interference, It involved an investigation of U.S. persons, including a former vice president. If you had knowledge, or the CIA had knowledge, that a government was going to investigate or drum up an investigation against a former vice president, would that not that wouldn't qualify as an intelligence matter? Would that qualify as an intelligence matter, yes or no?
Well, I don't mean to say that's kind of a hypothetical question, sir.
I don't think it's hypothetical. Well, that's exactly what's in the transcript. That's what he's asking for.
The complaint.
But that's what the president is asking the president of Ukraine to do. He's asking the president of Ukraine to investigate a former vice president of the United States. Does that qualify as an intelligence matter that the CIA would want to know?
The conversation was by the president to the president of Ukraine, as you know, and it is his, I am not.
But Mr. McGuire, I understand, but that cannot be an ultimate shield against transparency. It can't be an ultimate shield against accountability. The president is not above the law. One thing that you haven't told us is if your office or if the inspector general is not able to investigate, then who is able to investigate?
Congressman Castro, once again, sir, as I mentioned several times so far, although it did not come to the committee, the complaint was referred to the Judicial Department for criminal investigation. This was not swept under the rug.
I have one more question for you. Why did your office think you should appeal the IG's determination about quote-unquote urgent concern to the DOJ? That has never been done before. It's never been done before.
This is unprecedented in that in the past that there has never been a matter that the Inspector General has investigated that did not involve a member of the intelligence community or an organization that the Director of National
Intelligence. One last point I would make with respect to, you keep saying the president is not part of the intelligence community. I believe he is. The president, you agree, has the ability to declassify any single intelligence document. Do you agree that's true?
The president has original classification authority.
How is that person outside of the intelligence community?
Excuse me. He is the president of the United States above the entire executive branch.
Thank you.
Thank you, Congressman.
Mr. Heck.
When FBI Director Christopher Wray testified before the United States Senate that, and I'm quoting now, any public official or member of any campaign should immediately report to the FBI any conversations with foreign actors about, quote, influencing or interfering with our election. Now, Director Wray is, of course, the top cop in the United States of America. You agree with Director Wray, do you not, sir?
Congressman Heck, I do not disagree with Director Wray.
And is that same thing as you agree with him, sir?
Yes.
Okay, once thank again, you. Let me go on. Fast forward.
It was referred to the FBI.
Let me fast forward.
Yes, sir.
Was it referred to the FBI by the president who actually engaged in the conversation? No, it was not.
Mr. Maloney.
Quick question. In response to Mr. Himes, I think you left the door open that you spoke to the president of the United States about this whistleblower complaint. Sir, did you speak personally to the president of the United States at any time about this complaint?
Congressman, once again, I am the president's intelligence officer. I speak to the president. I cannot say one word.
Mr. Director, I know you speak to the president a lot. It's a simple question, sir. Did you speak to him about this whistleblower complaint? Yes or no?
Congressman Maloney, my conversation with the president of the United States is privileged.
So you're not denying that you spoke to the president? I'm not asking for the content, sir.
Congressman,
I don't want the content. Did you or did you not speak to the president about this whistleblower complaint?
I speak to the president about a lot of things, and anything that I say to the president of the United States in any forum is privileged.
Not asking for the content. Are you denying that you spoke to the president?
I am just telling once again, I speak to the president, and anything I say to the president is confidential.
Thank you, sir.
Sir, yeah, I mean, that's the way it is.
I understand. Thank you.
And, Director, you understand we're not asking about your conversations with the president about national security, about foreign policy, about the National Counterterrorism Center. We just want to know, did you discuss this subject with the president? You can imagine what a profound conflict of interest that would be. Did you discuss this subject, this whistleblower complaint, with the president? You can say, I did not discuss it with him, if that's the answer. That doesn't betray any privilege. And you can say, I did discuss it with him, but I'm not going to get into the content of those conversations. That question you can answer.
Chairman Schiff, once again, you know, my conversation, no matter what the subject is, with the President of the United States is privileged conversation between the Director of National Intelligence and the President.
Ms. Demings.
There's been a lot of talk this morning. The whole discussion, the whole reason why we're here centers around the U.S. relationship with Ukraine. I think you would agree that Ukraine is very dependent on the United States in terms of assisting them in defending themselves. Could you, based on your many years of experience in the military and now in your new position, talk a little bit about that relationship and how important it is for the United States to assist Ukraine if they're ever going to be able to defend themselves?
Yes, Congressman, I think that the United States has been extremely supportive of Ukraine. I would say that they are relying on us, as they rely on other people in Europe. And I would also say that the United States is probably paying more of their fair share for the support of Ukraine than the others. The threats are real for the Ukrainian people, and the stake of freedom and democracy is also, even though it's in the Ukraine, is also very much a concern.
So based on that, you would say Ukraine probably could never get there without the support and the assistance of the United States or from the United States of America?
I would say that if others were willing to step up and support, they might be able to get there.
But they are not. We're there. This complaint outlines a scheme by the President of the United States, and I'm not really sure what to call Rudy Giuliani these days, what his role is. Maybe he's the new fixer. I'm not sure. But either way, it involves a scheme to coerce Ukraine, this country that you say is so very dependent on the United States to defend themselves, to coerce Ukraine into assisting the president's reelection efforts in 2020. In the report from your inspector general, the memo that was sent to you, it says on July 18th, the Office of Management and Budget official informed the departments and agencies that the president earlier that month had issued instructions to suspend all U.S. security assistance to Ukraine. Neither OMB nor the NSC staff knew why this instruction had been issued. During interagency meetings on the 23rd of July and the 26th of July, OMB officials again stated explicitly that the instruction to suspend this assistance had come directly from the president, but they were not, but they were still unaware of a policy rationale. So the 23rd, 26th, on the 18th, this issue first came up where the president was rescinding or suspending that assistance that you said Ukraine so desperately depends on. Director McGuire, we deal in what's reasonable here. And I believe your inspector general included that in the report because this whole issue is about Ukraine's position, relationship with the United States, their dependency on the United States, and the president's efforts to coerce Ukraine into engaging in an illegal and improper investigation. Do you believe that's why your inspector general added that about suspending their support to Ukraine?
I think that Michael Atkinson found it to be credible, and he viewed that it was a matter of urgent concern to forward to this committee.
Do you think it's reasonable for the American people and for this committee on both sides to believe that there is a correlation or a nexus between the president suspending the aid and the conversation that took place on the
Congresswoman,
the follow-up conversation?
Yes, Congresswoman, that is the allegation that is made, and I did not have access to the transcripts. My only information was the ICIG's cover letter and the allegation, whistleblower allegation. The other information coming to light yesterday, as released by the president, changes things in different light.
Mr. Krishnamurthy.
I want to ask you a couple questions about the time surrounding July 25th to the time that you came into office as DNI. As you know, the phone call between President Trump and the Ukrainian president happened on July 25th of this year, correct?
I believe July 25th, I believe, sir.
At least one of them happened on July 25th. At that time, the DNI was Dan Coats, and his deputy was Sue Gordon. As you know, the whistleblower claim was filed on August 12th of this year, and then you took office on August 16th, four days later.
Yes, sir.
Prior to taking your new job, or since, did you discuss the July 25th call or the whistleblower complaint with DNI Coats?
I wouldn't have taken the job if I did. No, sir.
And how about with Sue Gordon?
No, not at all. I don't believe, to the best of my ability, I do not think that either Director Coats or our principal deputy, Sue Gordon, have any sense whatsoever about this whistleblower complaint or that Michael Atkinson had it.
Before your current role, did you discuss Ukraine with President Trump?
No, Congressman. I haven't discussed Ukraine with anybody. Let me put it to you that way.
You haven't discussed Ukraine with anybody in your current role as the acting DNI?
Well, as we intelligence reports, we've got about 190 countries out there, so whatever the president's daily brief is and matters that pertain to that, but as far as intelligence equities in that region right now, this has just not been something that has come to my attention in the 6 weeks that I've been the acting DNI.
Now, turning to the whistleblower and the inspector general, you don't know the identity of the whistleblower, right?
Congressman, I do not, and I've made it my business to make sure that I do.
Correct. And you don't know his political affiliation, obviously.
I do not. I do not know this individual.
Or her political affiliation. And, of course, you believe that the whistleblower was operating in good faith.
I do.
And without bias.
I don't know about that. I do not know about that. I do believe that the
But you have no reason to believe that he or she was acting with bias, correct?
I just believe that the whistleblower was acting in good faith.
But you have no reason to believe that the person was biased.
I would not know whether he biased or not biased, sir. I just don't know.
And, of course, you will do everything you can to protect the whistleblower from any attempts to retaliate against him or her, correct?
I will not permit the whistleblower to be subject to any retaliation or adverse consequences for going to the IG.
Now, the White House released a memorandum of telephone conversation from the July 25th, 2019 call, right?
I believe that was what was transmitted yesterday morning, sir.
And they call that a telcon in the jargon of these memoranda. Is that right?
I'm familiar. This is the first time I've ever seen the transcript of a presidential conversation with a foreign leader.
Okay, have you been?
Telcon would be short for telephone conversation, though.
Exactly. And have you been a party to a conversation between the president and a foreign leader on a phone call?
When I am in the office to provide the intelligence brief to the president, some foreign head of state might call in. The president may either ask us to leave or just stay there for a brief call from time to time. Yes, sir.
And there are note takers who actually scribble down furiously what's being said on those calls.
If they are note takers, they would not be in the room, Oval Office with us. They might be listening somewhere else, sir.
Like from the Situation Room. And in
but somewhere within the White House. Yeah.
And within this particular situation, maybe more than a dozen people were on the phone call.
That's the allegation, yes.
And they were all taking notes, presumably.
If they're good public servants, yes, Congressman.
Were you ever a party to a call where the notes that you took were then given to someone at the White House for keeping?
I have never been party to any call other than my own. I would take notes for my own at my level or as the director of National Counterterrorism Center, but I have never been privy to a conversation with the president where I would be involved in taking notes. It would just be happenstance. I happened to be there, and he felt comfortable enough to leave me for a brief conversation. But it's not anything that I would be in that office particularly for that matter.
I have a few more questions. Just to follow up, because I thought I heard you say a moment ago that you had no communication with the president on the subject of Ukraine. Did I understand you to say that?
I have not particularly had any conversation with anyone on the subject of Ukraine that didn't deal with the matter that we have right now in regard to the whistleblower complaint. So not particularly with the Office of Legal Counsel as far as mentioning Ukraine or as far as the Justice Department. All I did was send the documents forward. The allegations are in there, and you know, I just let the documents speak for themselves.
So you're saying that you did not have any conversation on the subject of Ukraine that did not involve this complaint?
That's correct, sir. I mean, I've been in the acting DNI for 6 weeks.
I'm just trying to understand, because that is suggestive that you did have a conversation involving the complaint with the president.
No. That is not what I said, sir.
Okay. Director, you mentioned early on when we were on the subject of what the Inspector General was able to investigate or not investigate, whether the president is within the intelligence community or subject to the intelligence community. And by the way, the statute doesn't require that the subject of the complaint be within the intelligence community. It requires the whistleblower to be an employee or detailee. It doesn't require that the subject, the person complained of, be an employee of the intelligence community. But you have adopted an interpretation by the Justice Department that essentially says the president is above the director, therefore the president is not subject to the jurisdiction of the director, therefore it doesn't meet the definition of urgent concern, therefore the Inspector General is done. Inspector General can't investigate anymore. That's the Inspector General's reading of the department opinion, that he is no longer allowed to investigate this. Is that your reading as well?
Chairman, not necessarily the president, but the allegation has to relate to the funding, administration, and operation of an intelligence activity within the responsibility and the authority of the Director of National Intelligence.
Okay, well, I'm just trying to get to whether the president is somehow beyond the reach of the law.
No, sir. No person in this country is beyond the reach.
Well, that's the way it should be, but I'm trying to figure out whether that's the way it is as a practical fact. The Inspector General believes that based on the opinion that you requested of the Department of Justice, he is no longer allowed to look into this because it doesn't meet the definition of an urgent concern because it involves the president. Is that your understanding of the department opinion as well, that the Inspector General no longer has jurisdiction to look into this?
It is my understanding that both the Inspector General and I and my team are waiting for, we were waiting for the resolution of executive privilege to be determined. It is now no longer executive privilege. I'm not sure exactly what the statute has as far as what Michael can do, but we also are looking for a way. Now, if I did not send it forward, as you know, under urgent concern within the 7 days, then the statute would allow the whistleblower to come to you and still be protected.
Director,
but because we are accommodating.
My point is this. The Department of Justice has said, because this doesn't meet the statutory definition, because this involves the president, the Inspector General has no jurisdiction to investigate. Now, if this Inspector General has no jurisdiction to investigate, because the president is above the agency, no Inspector General has jurisdiction to investigate. That is the effect of that opinion. Which, do you disagree?
I believe that the opinion was based on the reading of the statute and whether or not the situation here is compliant and comes underneath the statute. The Office of Legal Counsel opinion was that based on the criteria that you're required to have in order to support this legal statute, it does not. And he also said that because of that, it is not a matter of the intelligence community. But once again,
yes,
he said, however, you may go forward, and
that's
I have.
That's the key issue, Director. Because it involves the president, it does not involve the intelligence community. That is the sum and substance. And the effect of that is the Inspector General has told us that he no longer has jurisdiction to investigate. And by the logic of that opinion, nor does any other Inspector General. Now, as you point out, this was referred to the Justice Department, was referred to the FBI and Justice Department. That department, under Bill Barr, and with breathtaking speed, decided there's nothing to see here. It decided that we don't believe that this constitutes a violation of the campaign finance laws, and therefore we're not authorizing an investigation. The FBI is not authorized to investigate any of this. Any of this. So the IGs can't do it. According to the Department of Justice, the FBI can't do it because it doesn't meet their threshold that makes it worthy investigation. So at this point, only this committee and this Congress is in a position to investigate. And I want to ask you, going to the whistleblower complaint, whether you believe these allegations are worthy investigation. The whistleblower says, I have received information from multiple U.S. government officials that the President of the United States is using the power of his office to solicit interference from a foreign country in the 2020 U.S. election. You would agree that should be investigated, would you not?
Chairman, the horse has left the barn. You have all of the information. You have the whistleblower complaint. You have the letter from the ICIG. You have the Office of Legal Counsel opinion.
Yes, but and you have yes, we do. But would you agree that if there is a serious and credible
investigation,
that you agree there should be an investigation?
I believe that it is a matter to be determined by the chair and this committee.
Well, I'm asking you as a career military officer, someone who I greatly respect and I admire your service to the country. Do you believe if there is a credible allegation by a whistleblower, corroborated by apparently multiple U.S. government officials, that the President of the United States is using the power of his office to solicit interference from a foreign country in the 2020 election, do you believe that should be investigated?
I don't believe it was corroborated by other folks. The whistleblower says that he spoke or she spoke to about a dozen other people. This is secondhand information. I'm not criticizing the whistleblower.
Yes, but the Inspector General took those 2 weeks, as you well told us, to corroborate that information. Now, we don't know which, if any, of these officials the Inspector General spoke to, and found it credible. And you've told us that you have no reason to believe otherwise. Am I right?
I had no reason to doubt a career Inspector General lawyer in his determination on whether or not it was credible. That is something for Michael to determine.
And let me ask you this. The whistleblower also says over the past 4 months, more than half a dozen U.S. officials informed me of various facts related to this effort to seek foreign interference. You would agree that we should speak to those half a dozen U.S. officials, would you not?
I think that you have all the material that the committee needs. And I think it's up to the committee how they think they need to proceed.
Well, I'm asking your opinion. As the head of our intelligence agencies, do you think that we should talk to those other people and find out whether the whistleblower is right?
My responsibility was to get you the whistleblower letter, the complaint, and the other information released. I have done my responsibility. That is on the shoulders of the legislative branch and this committee.
Well, let me ask you this, Director. The whistleblower also says, I am also concerned that these actions pose risks to U.S. national security and undermine the U.S. government's efforts to deter and counter foreign interference in U.S. elections. You would agree, if there's a credible allegation along those lines, that we should investigate it?
I agree that if there was an election interference, the complaint was not about election interference. It was about a classified, confidential, diplomatic conversation
involving election interference by the president, sought by the president. That doesn't take it out of the realm of seeking foreign assistance. It makes it all the more pernicious. Wouldn't you agree?
As I said, I don't disagree with the IGIC's assessment that it was a credible matter.
The whistleblower further says, namely, the president sought to pressure the Ukrainian leader to take actions to help the president's 2020 re-election bid. You would agree that that should be investigated?
Not necessarily, sir. I mean, as far as it was investigated by the Federal Bureau of Investigation.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it went to the...
No, the Department of Justice concluded that this wouldn't violate the election laws. Now, no one can understand how they could reach that conclusion after the 2 years we've been through, but nonetheless, they didn't authorize the FBI to investigate it. You would agree someone should investigate this, wouldn't you?
I referred it. If I didn't, I would not have referred it to the Justice Department and to the FBI.
Well, then I'm glad that we're in agreement. The whistleblower says they told me that there was already discussion ongoing with White House lawyers about how to treat the call because of the likelihood in the official's retelling they had witnessed the president abuse his office for personal gain. You would agree that that should be investigated, wouldn't you?
All I know is that that's the allegation.
Right, sure. And it's credible and therefore should be investigated, right?
Well, it is hearsay, secondhand information. It should come to this committee for further investigation.
Thank you.
And I mean, you have it. You have the documents.
I just wanted to confirm that we're in agreement that you think the committee should investigate it. The whistleblower also says Donald Trump expressed his conviction that the new Ukrainian government will be able to quickly improve Ukraine's image and complete the investigation of corruption cases that have held back cooperation between Ukraine and the United States. This is the whistleblower citing the Ukrainian readout. You would agree that if the Ukrainian readout, when they're talking about corruption cases, is talking about investigating Biden and his son, and that has held back, the failure to do that has held back cooperation between our two countries, that should be investigated, right? That's of a national security dimension.
I don't agree with any of that. What I did not agree that it should be investigated. What I said was that I complied with my requirement to send you the documents.
Well,
this committee, and that it is up to the chair, ranking member, and this committee members to decide what to do with that information. I'm in no position to tell the chair or the committee to do an investigation or not do an investigation.
I find it remarkable that the Director of National Intelligence doesn't think credible allegations of someone seeking foreign assistance in a U.S. election should be investigated. Let me ask you this. The whistleblower further says, in the days following the phone call, I learned from multiple U.S. officials that senior White House officials had intervened to lock down all the records of the phone call. Do you have any reason to believe that the whistleblower's allegation there is incorrect?
I have no idea whether it is correct or incorrect, sir.
Someone should find out, though, right?
Excuse me?
Someone should find out if it's correct, shouldn't they?
I don't know if that is an incorrect allegation. I mean, I just do not know. Again, that is the work, that is the business of the executive branch of the White House and the office of the White House.
Well, corruption is not the business, or it shouldn't be, of the White House or anyone in it.
What the White House decides to do with their privileged communications and information, I believe, is the business of the White House.
Do you believe that's true even if that communication involves crime or fraud? I'm sure you're aware that there's an exception to any claim of privilege. The privilege can't be used to conceal crime or fraud.
As I said before, any crime or fraud or instances of wrongdoing should be referred to the Justice Department for investigation, as I did.
The whistleblower further alleges that White House officials told the whistleblower they were directed by White House lawyers to remove the electronic transcript, that is, of the call, from the computer system in which such transcripts are typically stored, and instead it was loaded into a separate electronic system that is otherwise used to store and handle classified information of a especially sensitive nature. One White House official described this act as an abuse of the electronic system. I do not know whether similar measures were taken to restrict access to other records of the call, such as contemporaneous handwritten notes taken by those who listened, and we should find out, shouldn't we?
Chairman Schiff, when I received a letter from Michael Atkinson on the 26th of August, he concurrently sent a letter to the Office of White House Counsel asking the White House Counsel to control and keep any information that pertained to that phone call on the 25th. It was a lengthy letter. Michael would be able to address it better. But I do believe that the ICIG, I know that the ICIG has sent a letter to the White House counsel requesting that they keep all of that information.
But you would agree that if there's a credible allegation from this credible whistleblower that White House officials were moving these records into a system that was not designed for that purpose in an effort to cover up essentially potential misconduct, that ought to be looked into. You would agree with that, wouldn't you?
To the best of my knowledge, when this allegation came forward, this whistleblower complaint on the 12th of August, I have no idea what the timeline was as far as whether or not the White House, the National Security Council, or anybody involved in that conversation, what they did with the transcripts, where they put them. I just have absolutely no knowledge, nor the timeline of that, Chairman. It is not something that would be under my authority or responsibility.
The whistleblower makes a series of allegations involving Mr. Giuliani, cites a report in the New York Times about his planned trip to Ukraine to press the Ukrainian government to pursue investigations that would help the president in his 2020 re-election bid. You would agree that if the president was instructing his personal lawyer to seek, again, foreign help in a U.S. presidential election, that that would be improper? I believe Mueller described such efforts to seek foreign assistance as unethical, unpatriotic, and very possibly criminal. Would you agree with Director Mueller that to seek foreign assistance that way would be unethical, unpatriotic, and very possibly a violation of law?
I believe that Mr. Giuliani is the president's personal lawyer. And whatever conversation that the president has with his personal lawyer, I would imagine would be by client attorney privilege. I am in no position to criticize the president of the United States on how he wants to conduct that, and I have no knowing of what Mr. Giuliani does or does not do.
Let me ask you about the last couple allegations of the whistleblower. I learned from U.S. officials that on or around 14 May, the president instructed Vice President Pence to cancel his planned travel to Ukraine to attend President Zelensky's inauguration on 20 May. Secretary of Energy Rick Perry led the delegation instead. According to these officials, it was also made clear to them that the president did not want to meet with Mr. Zelensky until he saw how Zelensky, quote, chose to act, unquote, in office. I do not know how this guidance was communicated or by whom. I also do not know whether this action was connected with the broader understanding described in the unclassified letter that a meeting or phone call with the president and President Zelensky would depend on whether Zelensky showed the willingness to play ball. Do you know whether Mr. Pence, Vice President Pence's trip, was pulled because of an effort to find out first whether Ukraine was willing to play ball?
Chairman Schiff, no, I do not. I have no knowledge of any of that until this information came to me from the ICIG. I have absolutely no situation awareness or no knowledge of any of those facts.
Would you agree that if the Vice President's trip was canceled in order to put further pressure on Ukraine to manufacture dirt on Mr. Biden, that that would be unethical, unpatriotic, and potentially a crime?
I do not know why the Vice President of the United States did not do that. I do know what the allegation was within the whistleblower complaint, and I don't know whether that allegation is accurate or not, Mr. Chairman.
Finally, the whistleblower says, on July 18, an Office of Management and Budget official informed departments and agencies that the President earlier that month had issued instructions to suspend all U.S. security assistance to Ukraine. Neither OMB nor the NSC staff knew why this instruction had been issued. Senator McConnell said the other day that he spoke with the Secretary of Defense and Secretary of State, and he didn't know why the instruction had been given. Doesn't that strike you as suspicious, Director, that no one on the national security staff, no one in the senior leadership, apparently, of the party here in Congress that had approved the aid, understood why the president was suspending aid? Doesn't that strike you as just a little suspicious?
Chairman Schiff, I'm just unaware, be honest with you, how those decisions are made. And once again, I just have no situation awareness of what happened with the holding of the funding from OMB.
As a military man, if this military aid was withheld from an ally that is fighting off Putin's Russia, and it was done so to be used as leverage to get dirt in a U.S. political campaign, don't you think that should be investigated?
I have no reason to believe. I do not understand. I have no situation awareness if that was withheld or why it was withheld, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I can tell you, we are going to find out.
The Lawfare podcast is produced in cooperation with the Brookings Institution. If you haven't yet, please get on Facebook and Twitter and tell your friends and followers about the Lawfare podcast and give us a rating and review wherever you listen to us. You can also purchase Lawfare swag at www.thelawfarestore.com. This episode was edited by me, Elena Kagan. Until next time, thanks for listening.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.